This is not the sound of a stream running through the mountains. It's water from a leaking pipe trickling down a stairway. That's not a frog splashing into a lake. It's a piece of sheetrock falling into a puddle on a kitchen floor. And that's not a hiker taking a deep breath of mountain air. It's a homeowner gasping at the sight of a $12,000 water damage repair bill. 40% of homeowners have experienced water damage. Protect your home with the Moen Smart Water Monitor and Shutoff. Moen.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
To some extent, we should be nervous, but not nervous about AIs taking over the world, not nervous because of the Skynet. I think we should be more nervous about the fact that AI is still very dumb and the fact that potentially dumb but powerful people will control it.
You're listening to the Science Focus podcast from the BBC Focus magazine team. We're the UK's best-selling science and technology monthly, available in print and in several digital formats throughout the world. Find out more at sciencefocus.com or look out for us in your app store.
Hello and welcome to the Science Focus podcast. I'm Alice Lipscomb-Southwell, the production editor of BBC Focus magazine. Today there is barely any device that doesn't have a computer brain powering it under the hood. But how smart really is this artificial intelligence? We seem happy to let AI improve our smartphone photos or turn the lights on when it gets dark, but the thought of autonomously driving our cars leaves some of us uneasy. And of course, there is the dystopian vision of the future with robot Terminators enslaving humanity. But it doesn't have to be this way. Online editor Alexander McNamara speaks to theoretical physicist Jim Al-Khalili ahead of his new BBC4 documentary, The Joy of AI, in which he explores the history of artificial intelligence, what it can do today, and why embracing the positives of AI into our lives can lead to a better future for us all.
So you've got a new programme that's out soon called The Joy of AI.
Yes.
I was just wondering if you'd be able to sort of just kick things off by explaining to us what exactly is AI?
Well, AI stands for artificial intelligence, and it really does seem to be the buzz phrase around at the moment because the technology involving artificial intelligence very generally is rapidly, rapidly evolving. The thing is that when we talk about AI, we tend to mean something very general indeed. And I think some of the people working in the field might argue, well, that's not really artificial intelligence. I mean, an example, we all use Siri on smartphones what's the other one in the homes?
Alexa.
I don't have it, so it's not on the tip of my tongue. Siri and Alexa, you know, which sort of help, you know, they answer questions. They sound as though they're intelligent. They sound as though they're sort of figuring stuff out for you. The same with things like Google Translate, or even just the way, you know, Amazon or Facebook are able to sort of, you know, directly advertise stuff to you. You think, how do they know that? But of course, it's because of what you searched for before. So all of these things in technology are sort of classed broadly in artificial intelligence. what I'm interested in, and certainly what this program is about, is where we're going in the future. Because artificial intelligence is basically a machine behaving intelligently, doing intelligent things, not just number crunching. And that, we've not got there yet, but we're moving very fast towards it. So it's very exciting. But also, of course, what comes with it are these sort of words of warning that we need to make sure we know what's coming over the horizon.
Mm. So what sort of thing, what's the difference between a regular computer program and something that actually can be classed as an intelligent artificial application?
Well, there are various ways of defining it, because, of course, a computer program, if it's complex enough, can do things much more quickly than a human brain can, but also can give the appearance of being intelligent. You know, a computer program that can beat a grandmaster at chess is just running an algorithm, you know, lines of code saying, if this, then do that, if that, then do that. But, you know, a game of chess, you know, what it can do is explore all possible moves into the future and decide what is the optimum piece to move, giving it the appearance of intelligent, whereas what it's really doing is number crunching. Very often what we mean by true intelligence nowadays is if the machine uses something called machine learning, whereby it's not simply given a set of instructions by a programmer and it just follows them blindly, but it learns as it goes. So it sort of builds its own code, as it were. It becomes increasingly sophisticated. And that's what modern AI machines are doing now. They're learning as they go. They use something called neural networks, which are meant to mimic, in a sense, the way our brain works, the way our brain is wired and all the neurons and how they're all interconnected. A neural network is a sort of an abstract mathematical version of the human brain. And they are starting to show real intelligence by anyone's definition. Mm.
So that's what we're doing. We're sort of creating a brain, a computer brain, as it were. How similar, or what, you know, what's the size comparison between this machine learning brain and a human brain?
Well, I mean, in terms of physical size, I suppose it's not really so relevant. You know, you could imagine some small thing, but wires connected down the corridor in a computer lab to a vast array of huge machines. So in terms of physical size, I suppose not so important. But in terms of the capabilities, of course, machines, artificial intelligences are way, way behind what a human brain can do. I mean, they give the appearance of being intelligent. You know, an AI can look at a picture and understand from the pixels what it represents. It can recognize pictures of a dog, for example, but it doesn't know what a dog is. It doesn't understand the concept of dog. And so while it can do certain things faster and more efficiently, and even sometimes in a more clever way than humans, that's still not intelligent in the way that we would talk about it. And I think the problem is we're very often too infected by Hollywood movies. And so, you know, we think of AIs or being intelligent as somehow being conscious, being sentient, being self-aware. That may come in the future, but we're a long, long way, many decades away from that.
So is that sort of sentience the difference as it is between artificial intelligence we know and human intelligence?
It's the difference between artificial intelligence and intelligence in lots of living things, mainly mammals. You know, I don't think there's nothing special about human intelligence as such. You know, a dog can feel happy and angry and sad and jealous, which we regard as human traits. No artificial intelligence is anywhere near being able to have emotions in that sense, you know, because these are sort of higher level thinking that really only come about in sentient beings, and that's not just constrained to humans.
Hmm. So is calling it artificial intelligence really the right sort of wording? Have we got that quite right?
Probably not, in hindsight. I mean, we talk in the program about how it first came about, you know, programming machines to think for themselves in a very general way. Probably if we had to sort of redefine it, we'd call it something else, you know, machine learning or deep learning or artificial neural networks, maybe more accurate. They're just not quite as catchy, I guess, as artificial intelligence, AI. I mean, the term is here to stay, so we just have to be careful what we mean by it. Mm.
So with coming back to that point of how it all began, how did we arrive to the point that we are today with artificial intelligence or machine learning or wherever we are?
Well, it grew in parallel with computer science in general, but the development of algorithms that you can code into an electronic device using binary, you know, set of zeros and ones, is something, you know, we go back long before people like Alan Turing, you know, people, you know, like Babbage, for example, you know, the calculating machines that automate a process of numerical calculations. Artificial intelligence grew in sort of the middle of the 20th century, very slowly, but it allowed computers to try and solve problems that maybe we were unable to solve, not just because they could do things more quickly, but, you know, they could solve logic problems in a way that wasn't simply down to lines of code and algorithms. So it's, in that sense, it's different from general computer coding, computer programming. But the lines are blurred, and it's really only in the last decade or so that we started to see AI machines doing something very different that is not the same as just making more and more powerful computers that do calculations faster and faster. I mean, a lovely example is the neural nets codes at DeepMind, the British London-based company now owned by Google. But they are essentially probably the world leaders in AI, and they pioneered this idea of deep learning. So they have these AI machines, AlphaGo, AlphaZero, which do lots of different things, as well as beat the best computer chess players in the world. You know, computers can already beat the best grandmasters at chess. These AI machines, just from a few hours looking at a chessboard and playing against themselves, they've learnt and have become sort of superhuman in their abilities. So that's different from just writing long lines of code and building more and more powerful computers.
Mm-hmm. There's a lovely bit in the program. You mentioned AlphaGo there, where the sort of move that the computer did was so different to anything that a human has done. And is that the machine learning things in a different way to how humans work?
Yes, I mean, that is what is so exciting and some might argue also very scary, because what the AI did there was make a move. This is the Chinese game of Go, which people regard as a, you know, more a better indicator of innovative sort of ways of thinking than, say, chess. Chess is very, you know, if you do this, that happens. You do this, that happens. So you can explore all possibilities. With Go, it's much more about intuition. And what this AI did was make a move that all the sort of grandmasters watching it play against one of their own thought was a silly move. You know, why did it do that? You know, that doesn't make sense. That's not what we would do. It just doesn't make sense. And it was only much later on in the game that they appreciated what a genius move it was, because it became important as the game developed. So it had discovered a solution to a problem that the people who built the machine didn't understand and weren't expecting. So that's what's different. These AIs are starting to do stuff that we don't quite understand how they've come to. That's sort of, you know, real innovation, real intuition that's going on inside these deep learning machines.
So that sounds both incredible, but that also to me seems where the scary bit does come in, like how much they're going to learn and what.
I mean, I think that this is what, you know, a lot of people are concerned about, that, you know, if they're doing things that we can't understand, if they become sort of true black boxes, then how can we maintain control over them? What if they start getting smarter and smarter ever more quickly and reach what we refer to as the singularity? They develop general, artificial general intelligence. They really become self-aware and then decide that they don't need humans. You know, this is the Skynet scenario from the Terminator movies. And you know, people who work in AI, and you know, oh God, you know, let's see how long it takes before someone brings up the Terminator, because that's, you know, that's always the worry. People who work in AI are much more optimistic that we can maintain control, and that we, you know, we can build in sufficient safeguards. Even though AIs may end up being more intelligent than us, they would still be in our control. Now, that may sound, you know, rather somewhat difficult to achieve, and I understand people's issues with it. Actually, this was the reason why. When we talked about making this program, and of course the joy of AI follows in a series of documentaries made by the same production company, Wingspan, for the BBC, starting with The Joy of Stats, which was presented by the late Hans Rosling, a statistician, and that documentary won a BAFTA. It was fantastic. There have been others following on from that. So The Joy of Data was presented by another mathematician, Hannah Fry. So this is the next in the series, The Joy of AI. And I did say, it warned the production company. I said, well, a lot of people won't see the words joy and AI fitting very comfortably together. So we need to be rather mindful of that, that people are nervous about it. And I think, you know, to some extent, we should be nervous. But not nervous about AIs taking over the world. Not nervous because of the Skynet. I think we should be more nervous about the fact that AI is still very dumb, and the fact that potentially dumb but powerful people will control it for reasons that are not so good. You know, technology itself is not good or evil. Technology is just the application of scientific ideas. It's how we humans use technology. So AI can be used for good or for evil. I mean, a very simple example is you could use AI together with, you know, robotics for sending in autonomous bomb disposal devices, you know, robots that will go in and understand, you know, their surroundings and defuse a bomb so that humans don't have to risk their lives. But similarly, you could have AIs in autonomous killer drones that, you know, sort of various countries are thinking about using. So these drones that will fly over enemy lines, not only just to scout out and send images back, but maybe take an autonomous decision as to whether they should take a human life. And those sorts of things are rather more worrisome than, you know. So we need to know what's coming. I think that sometimes people worry about, oh, well, you know, driverless cars, that's a terrible thing. Well, no, that'll come. Driverless cars will be here, and we'll be absolutely fine with them. And we'll solve all our problems that we have with, you know, driverless cars, computer driving cars, and it'll become the most natural thing for us. And we will wonder how we were ever worried about such a thing. But there are other aspects of AI that we do need to be more careful about.
I sort of think of it in a way like the when the Industrial Revolution happened, and there were the you know, the Luddites were smashing the machines because they saw them as a threat. I wonder if we're now at the beginning of a sort of artificial intelligence revolution, whereas 100 years down the line, we'll go, actually, it wasn't so bad. Life is much better now through the back of it.
Oh, I'm convinced that will be the case. Of course, at the time when technologies start to replace human labor, there's always a pushback, and understandably so. People will lose their jobs, you know. But that has happened, as you say, since the Industrial Revolution. You know, ever since steam engines came in, because they could do the job more efficiently, more cheaply, and because they were stronger than human muscle, of course they replaced humans. Robotic arms on factory production lines replaced humans because they could do things more efficiently and more quickly and so on, and more cheaply. So this is just another in the long line of technologies replacing humans in doing certain jobs, but on the other hand, making our lives easier. You know, try persuading a 1950s housewife who's just been given a washing machine that in fact you know, technology is evil, that she should go back to doing all her washing by hand. I think the difference with the AI revolution is that we are still not sure how much of an impact it will have. It'll have a huge impact. I always say that if you look back, we've only had the internet and the World Wide Web for a quarter of a century. AI will be equivalent to that in terms of it changing our lives. And imagine, you know, now life without the internet. The AI will change our lives equally, if not more, than the internet has. And it'll do it more, far more quickly than the next 25 years. What it'll do will change in the next 10, 15 years. So it's coming so fast, and it's going to change so many aspects of our lives. We just need to be ready for it. We shouldn't be afraid of it. We just need to be prepared.
I guess that's one of those things. People are, when they hear about AI, they think, oh, it's going to take our jobs. You know, I'm lucky. I'm in the position where I get to speak to people for, you know, it's part of my job. But there are some that will obviously be more susceptible to being taken over. Will AI create more jobs around that? So, yeah, will it create more jobs around it as opposed to just taking them away as people are afraid of?
I predict it certainly will. Of course, what it'll do will be create new jobs that haven't been invented yet that we can't even imagine right now. And that's the difficulty of you know. So I said, was the quote, prediction is very unreliable, particularly about the future. Some Danish proverb, I think. Yes, new technologies have always meant that certain jobs have been transferred from humans to machines, but they've always brought with them new jobs that weren't around before. But we don't know what they are, and we don't know whether the number of new jobs created will, you know, it's not necessarily a zero-sum game. The number of new jobs created will exactly match the number of jobs that AIs have taken over from humans. And so many people are understandably, and I think quite rightly, nervous about what AI will do, because, you know, companies and you know, an industry are always looking. They're looking for, you know, profits. That's their bottom line, and efficiency. And if an AI can do something more efficient, and we're already seeing that. You know, very often you'll phone up a restaurant to book a table, and you'll talk to someone who's actually isn't a someone; it's a machine. You know, because it can do things efficiently, and it can recognize your frequently asked questions, and it will have the stock answers. And so jobs will go, and a lot of them. What we don't know is, you know, is it 10%? Is it 60%? Will it affect certain countries more than others, depending on what their economy is like, depending on what sorts of industries they have? These are unknowns. But the fact is, we can't stop the march of progress. AI is coming. And so what we should do is, rather than hide away from it or think it's evil and not want to engage with it, we need to be prepared for it, because it'll come. And if society decides they're scared of AI and governments decide they don't want to talk about it or be prepared for it, I mean, others will. You know, the big corporations, your Googles and Amazons and Facebooks and so on, they will use AI, and let alone, you know, whether rogue states make use of it to interfere with democracies or whatever, cyber terrorists. You know, it's going to come. We just need to make sure we know what it can and can't do, while, of course, you know, trying to minimise its impact on society and on people's livelihoods.
Mm. So it's sort of embracing AI at this point, rather than just having the fear of what's to come.
Yeah, I mean, I think people are right to be nervous, but having a fear of what's to come sometimes for me means, oh, I don't want to know. I don't want anything to do with it. That's not going to help. You know, technology is coming, and technology, it'll be wonderful if we're prepared for it. You know, just think about the advances AI could do in medicine. And healthcare, you know, and you know, recognizing tumors that no human could possibly see, helping us with, you know, helping surgeons, you know, with augmented reality, AI, just, you know, just the standard, you know, driverless cars would cut down on 80% of road accidents, because 80% of road accidents are down to human error, you know, losing concentration, tiredness or whatever. That wouldn't happen with AIs. I always think there's a lovely example. So in the program, I talked to a robotics expert, Paul Newman, who they're developing driverless cars. And he told me, I'm not quite sure actually when it made it into the program, but he told me this wonderful notion that if he were to take his car out tomorrow and make a silly, you know, do a silly mistake that causes an accident, chances are in the future he won't make that mistake again. He will be he will have learnt from his mistake. But others may make that mistake, of course. Whereas if AI controls cars, one AI making a mistake, because they're interconnected, all other cars on the planet will never make that mistake themselves again, because it's learning all the time. So it just gets better and better. And we can, one day we will sit back in our cars that's, without even, the cars won't even have a steering wheel. We just jump in and tell it where we want to go. And we'll wonder what all the fuss was about.
And we'll look back over those years and just go, what were we doing driving at all?
Well, absolutely. Yes, back in the day when we actually had to manually steer a car. Wow, how crazy. No wonder there were so many road accidents, so many people killed on the roads.
That sort of brings me through to my next question, actually, which was, I was just thinking, you know, the show is itself very positive, and actually you come out with a very positive view of AI at the end of it. I was just wondering, what do you think will be the next big thing that we see that in AI that's, like, you know, very revolutionary, that will really make everyone go, wow, this is great?
I think things like, you know, certainly things like driverless cars are still probably a decade or more away. So what's happening now is the advances in, you know, things like chatbots, the likes of, you know, Siri on your phone. It's incremental. So it's not suddenly there's a revolution. AIs do something that hasn't occurred to anyone. I think over the coming 5 years or so, we're just going to see increased sophistication. You know, it wasn't that long ago when we were all utterly blown away by Google Translate, that you could type in a word into Google and it'll tell you the translation of that, and then you can cut and paste a whole paragraph and translate it. Now you just walk around with your smartphone and you just talk to it. You just talk to Siri, you know, translate. You say something in your language and it speaks the other language to whoever you want to talk to. The next step will be some sort of universal translator as much loved by science fiction. That's not so far away. That's not so crazy. So yeah, AIs will sort of integrate throughout so many different areas of life. So that something called the Internet of Things, which I don't cover actually in the program, where, you know, all home appliances, we're already seeing home appliances all being interconnected, so you can speak into your phone to turn your central heating on or to turn the oven on, your fridge might tell you you're running low on milk. That's probably not quite there yet, but the notion that everything in the home or in the workplace is interconnected and being controlled by some AI that ensures everything runs efficiently, whether it's, you know, environmentally efficient or whether it's simply to make your life more comfortable, that's going to be with us in the coming years, and it'll be with us, and we won't sort of notice a point when, you know, yesterday we didn't have it and today we do, because these things happen gradually and incrementally. It's just a very steep incremental rise because things are changing so quickly.
I'm just thinking, with the idea that it's all that everything is speaking to each other, it's just sort of made me think, who is ultimately deciding what the AI decides is good and is, you know, this is the optimum position for this. This is the growth. Is it democratically done as an average and everything, or are the biases of the developers and the people who create it, are those being fed into it somehow?
That, I think, for me is the crucial thing that we need to make sure we get right. That is what we should be most worried about with the coming of AI, and not your Skynet scenario of the AIs themselves being in control. It's the those in control of the AIs. The worry is that artificial intelligence may lead to further inequality, you know, between the haves and have-nots. You know, if you're controlled by, you know, your life is run by this AI, which itself is run and controlled by some organization or corporation, that's what we need to sort of guard against. That's why there needs to be more public debate. You have to be in control of your own AI at home. You have to be able to optimize it. The decisions it makes should supplement and help your decision-making process. It should make your lives easier, but not at the cost of doing, you know, being controlled by someone else who wants something insidious from you. So yes, you know, is it the programmer who controls the AI, who controls what the AI can or can't do? That's what we need to discuss very carefully.
Is that sort of a role for governments, or is that, as you mentioned earlier, there could be governments that take it, or, you know, Googles and Apples and Facebooks and Microsofts, they will be the ones who ultimately have the power and take it?
Yeah, certainly governments have a role to play to make sure that these powerful organizations and corporations are not in control of the way AI goes. But also there needs to be wider societal understanding of AI. People, you know, whether this program helps, this is one tiny drop in the ocean, but there needs to be more public dialogue. And those who do understand, and those, you know, the governments, certainly in the UK, for example, which is one of the countries that leads the world in AI, there are government committees, there are groups who are writing reports on the concerns about AI that are published. The worry is that they just get read by a small fraction of society, whereas there needs to be a broader push to educate people, so people are just much more aware of AI. And then, of course, in a democracy, it's people who then vote for governments that they think are going to look after their concerns, as is always the case. And I don't think at the moment there's enough understanding of what AI is about in wider society. Most people either don't know what's coming, or are too scared to engage, or simply don't understand the capabilities that are just around the corner, and that has to change.
Stepping aside and not necessarily excluding AI, you're obviously most well known as a physicist. What do you predict will be the big breakthroughs in physics in 2019 or the next couple of years?
Ooh, big breakthroughs in physics. I think it's probably not going to come from sort of the sexy areas of astronomy or particle physics. You know, the Large Hadron Collider is currently going to shut down, and they're not going to be announcing new particles discovered. I don't know whether there's going to be big discoveries in astronomy. I think the big advances are coming where physics overlaps with other areas. We're in interdisciplinary science. So, you know, AI is a good example. You know, it's not just computer scientists working in AI. They're working with neuroscientists and physicists and mathematicians and so on. Physicists are working with biologists in sort of genetic engineering and genomics, in nanotechnology and new sort of smart materials. So those are areas that we're going to see some interesting advances. There's a lot of scope for progress. I don't think it's going to be in the more esoteric sort of theoretical boundaries of our knowledge. It's more in learning about the world and what we can do with you know, new devices, new instrumentation, you know, things like artificial intelligence, I guess, is an example. So I don't see any big revolutions around the corner. but exciting smaller advances that are going to be probably of more immediate application to everyday lives.
Mm-hmm. I hear that a lot. A lot of the people I speak to, they say it's not so much the individual disciplines, it's the crossing over of the disciplines and everyone working together to that, and that's what's really changing things at the moment.
Yeah, and we're seeing that more and more. You know, it used to be frowned upon. It used to be a sort of, oh, well, you know, if you work in interdisciplinary science, then you're just a jack of all trades, master of none. But certainly, for example, the scientists I interview on Life Scientific on Radio 4, invariably, these are people who either work in interdisciplinary sciences or more often than not have started in one field and applied their expertise in a completely different field. And so, you know, have seen things from a different angle. And that has led to innovation and advances. So while we do need people to be experts, burrowing down deeply into their own specialist area, the really exciting stuff these days, yes, as I say, are likely to come from the crossovers. Where we, you know, unless you talk to people from other disciplines in science, you will never have come across. It's only that cross-fertilization of ideas that leads to genuinely new advances.
That was Professor Jim Al-Khalili on artificial intelligence. The Joy of AI is on BBC 4 next Tuesday, the 4th of September at 9 p.m. Thanks for listening to the Science Focus podcast. The September issue of BBC Focus magazine is out now, and in it, we look at the future of food, from how farming is preparing for population growth and climate change, and also see what we'll be eating in 2028. We also delve deep into the minds of psychopaths, uncover crimes using DNA ancestry kits, and ask why people believe in conspiracy theories that fly in the face of scientific evidence. As always, there is much, much more inside.
Thank you for listening to the Science Focus podcast from the BBC Focus magazine team. We're the UK's best-selling science and technology monthly, available in print and in several digital formats throughout the world. Find out more at sciencefocus.com or look out for us in your app store.